You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. What will it take to reverse the recent rise in gun violence in Baltimore? The city has passed 250 homicides for the year, and the rate of violence has picked up in the last 2 months. The city witnessed 37 homicides in September, compared to 31 in the same month last year. Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh was asked at her press meeting last week about the swell in violence in the city. Here's part of her answer.
There is a drug war taking place in our city. There are too many illegal guns continuing on the streets of our city. As someone, you know, the streets always talk. They give you information. There are at least seven different products being sold over in West Baltimore. If you ride through, you can hear it. We got this, I got this, I got this, and everybody's territorial. And so people are protecting their territories with guns. And while we don't have enough officers on the street, we do have officers on the street. As I said, we've said all hands on deck.
Pugh said the city is planning to add additional lights on street corners as well as 100 more cameras. At his own press conference, Acting Interim Police Commissioner Gary Tuggle said the current level of violence is intolerable.
Every resident of the city of Baltimore deserves an effective police service, right? And we've got the responsibility to provide that. You know, this level of violence is no more tolerable to us than it is to those residents. And I want to assure them that we're going to do our damnedest to address it.
The Baltimore Police Department has taken 230 officers off of administrative duties and put them on patrol, as well as bolstering its ranks with officers from the Maryland State Police, Baltimore County Police Department, MTA Police, and the Baltimore City Sheriff's Department. The pace of murder was already heartbreaking earlier in the year when it was averaging less than one murder a day. Since the end of the summer, though, it has picked up to about eight homicides every week. Brandon Soderberg is a freelance journalist, former editor of City Paper, former managing editor of Baltimore Beat. He and reporter Baynard Woods are working on a book about the Baltimore Police Department's Gun Trace Task Force. Eight officers from that task force have been convicted in a federal corruption case that detailed how they robbed people, planted evidence, and falsified timesheets. Brandon, welcome back to On the Record.
Thanks for having me.
Baltimore is on the search for its next police commissioner. This would be the fourth to serve at the top of the force in 2018. The city has been without a permanent police commissioner since May. How did we get here?
The way we got here begins at the beginning of the end of the 2000s. We've actually had nine so far since then, which I can't think of a lot of organizations that would have had run through nine commissioners in less than 20 years. We'll be going on our 10th this year. We'll have had four this year because Tuggle has decided he does not want to apply for the job.
Gary Tuggle,
the interim commissioner, I apologize. Yeah. So how we got here, I think, is a lot of that degree of dysfunction. And we're moving through commissioners quickly. It's a hard job, I understand, but there hasn't been any stability, and that keeps sort of building on itself more and more every time. I mean, I can't imagine having a job where you have had four bosses in 1 year. That's not a great working environment if I worked at, I don't know, Target or something, or if you worked in a school and you had that many principals. It's impossible to do your job. It's impossible to have a strong morale for your job as a police officer on top of the homicide spike.
So right after the first of the year, Mayor Pugh said she had lost confidence in Kevin Davis as commissioner and fired him. She had confidence in Daryl Souza, but he left after it was found out he had not at some point paid federal taxes. And as you said, Gary Tuggle withdrew his name from consideration. So what is the outlook for the timeline and for the level of confidence?
Well, the timeline that Mayor Pugh set for herself was the end of this month, October, but she's already said that may not happen anymore. Earlier in the year, she said she was going to have a commission that would be public, that would sort of be transparent. We'd all get a sense of who was being looked at. She never actually followed through on that. So it's a serious problem of transparency, which is also a problem with the police department, that we have these promises made by our mayor in terms of what she's going to do about the police department, especially the commissioner, and then it doesn't happen. And I stress, go back to this right now. Like, imagine you're a police officer on the street and you hear you're going to have a commissioner, then you don't. You know, T.J. Smith, the media spokesperson, left recently around that same time as when Interim Commissioner Tuggle said he wasn't going to continue to apply for the job. I speak to some police officers off the record, and there's a really low morale, and there's a concern that there's more indictments coming. So on top of the murder spike and all these other things that are going on, these serious public safety issues, there's a real concern within the department and I think within the city government that we're going to have another scandal soon. That it's almost seems inevitable that more police officers are going to be federally indicted, tied to the task force.
Federal indictments.
Yeah, I think that's almost inevitable. That's what I'm hearing, at least. I don't intend to push too many rumors, but that's something I think you hear a lot. And even if it's not true, again, imagine you're a police officer and hearing all that. That's all kind of on your back when you leave every day to be a police officer. It's hard to do your job that way.
So the critics who say there is not enough transparency in this search process, what would they like to see in by way of the process?
I think that what people would like to see is, it seems clear that she's not sharing this information, including with, say, the city council. They've also been very critical of her so about this issue. And so I think people would just like to know, who are we considering? When we've gone through so many commissioners so quickly, it seems important that this person is thoroughly vetted. It was clear to a lot of people that Daryl D'Souza, the previous commissioner, was not vetted very well. I mean, as soon as his name came out, reporters like me were looking around and we found out that he had three shootings in 1995, that he had gotten a fight with a bunch of dirt bikers in 1990 as a police officer. He worked in the same district as some of the task force members. And then with D'Souza, you had the tax issue, which ultimately is why he resigned. The prosecutors who charged him for that are the same prosecutors that are looking into the Gun Trace Task Force. So we've gone through this. I mean, briefly, you know, again, when Kevin Davis came in, the city paper revealed that he had been involved in an illegal detainment of a man in 2001. When Batts came in, everyone said, oh, well, he worked in Oakland, Anthony Batts, the previous commissioner. There was a concern about his involvement in Oakland during the Oscar Grant, who was killed, and there were riots revolving around that. There was this concern somehow that because Batts had been in a city that had a riot, that would be a good police officer. We keep repeating these problems. And then, most recently, you had a kind of leak of this guy named Joel Fitzgerald from Fort Worth, Texas, the commissioner there. And it was said that he was going to be the commissioner. It was reported by the mayor of Fort Worth, which is truly bizarre. And then what happened was it was denied. And then Pew said, no, that's not true. And then she said she had to take him out of the running because his name had been revealed, which I don't understand at all. If you vetted this guy, if you like this guy, why is it such a big deal that we know publicly who might be our police commissioner early?
Well, has Baltimore used a more transparent process in picking other commissioners?
I don't think we really have. So yeah, that's true. It's not a new problem. I think a major part of it, though, would be that technically the Baltimore Police Department is a state agency. This is something that more and more people in city council are very upset about. Also, State Senator Bill Ferguson has addressed this as well. He's the chair of the Gun Trace Task Force Commission that's looking into the task force. And the problem with being a state agency is it's essentially up to the mayor, and the council just has to approve. So really, the council doesn't have a lot of control, and so the mayor doesn't have any motivation to be more transparent about it. She pretty much puts someone up to the council, and it's kind of expected that the council will approve that person. With D'Souza, Councilman Ryan Dorsey was the only person that voted against D'Souza.
That's reporter and editor Brandon Soderberg here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about Baltimore's search for a police commissioner at the same time a surge of homicides grips the city. So as you said, the city council will vote on whether or not to confirm the mayor's pick. What do we know about what city council members are looking for in the next commissioner or what they make of the mayor's process?
I mean, I think they're very frustrated with the mayor's process. I don't want to speak for them too much. And I think that on some level, they're probably jaded. Like what they're looking for is not relevant because they don't have any power over it. I hate to be so cynical about it, but I think when you see, say, public safety hearings with the council or you go to a council meeting, they stress this a great deal that they don't have a lot of control over it. I certainly think what the baseline demand would be vetting this person more thoroughly. Even with this gentleman, Joel Fitzgerald, it was kind of immediately revealed that there had been some scandals in the Fort Worth department, including some stuff about demoting officers who had sort of spoken out against troubled officers, retaliating people who were reporting corruption. At some point, it seemed like the mayor was going to pick this person, but then she said because it was revealed early, she couldn't pick that person, which I just don't understand. I keep going back to that. I don't understand why someone that she thinks is good to be the commissioner ceased to be good the commissioner because we found out about it too early. I don't understand.
You said earlier that you think the messiness, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but the turmoil of the search is affecting policing. Is it having an effect on executing the reforms prescribed by the city's consent decree with the Justice Department?
I don't know if it's having a direct effect, but I think that that ties into all of this is that there's not a lot of hope that the consent decree will do a whole lot. It's moving slowly. There's a recent conflict in which the Civilian Review Board has stopped getting cases from the Baltimore police to look into, sort of civilian complaints about police officers. That was a big public issue a couple weeks ago. I think that these things all tie together, even something like overtime, which is another... I mean, one of the things that happened after the task force scandal was we were going to get fingerprint scanners for officers that would really prove when they were on duty. And Kevin Rector of The Sun asked the mayor about that, and she was basically like, oh, no, we don't actually have that. And that was something that was promised earlier in the year. There's just not a lot of transparency and not a lot of follow-through, and that's really, really frustrating for the city and officers.
The Gun Trace Task Force, of course, was testimony that said officers on this force planted evidence and regularly violated people's constitutional rights. Baltimore State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby has said her office is reviewing criminal cases that were built on evidence from the now convicted officers. Tell us about that review process.
So the review process is another thing that's going very slowly, but the idea was that any arrest involving these officers, these eight officers that were convicted of doing a lot of horrible things to citizens, needed to be reviewed and to make the determination about whether these cases could still be prosecuted. So we know that these officers were stealing and dealing drugs. We know they were entering people's homes pre-search warrant. And so it really calls into question people's charges. And so the state's attorney, in collaboration or along with the public defender's office, specifically Deborah Levy, are looking at these individually. And just recently, the Office of the Public Defender also announced that they felt like the state's attorney's office is moving too slow, trying to retain too many of these cases.
How many cases do you think we're talking about?
I believe it was narrowed down to around 2,000. So that's a really good example of the devastating effect of the task force. Like, certainly this was said during the sentencing for the officers, that most of these cases were probably involving individuals who were committing a crime, and yet the involvement of this task force prevents those people are going to get out because all of the investigation has been called into question. But what we're now seeing, though, is the state's attorney's office is trying to minimize how many they really want to overturn. They're working very hard to find any reason to retain the case, which the public defender's office is really kind of worried about. And to sort of bring it back to the mayor again, you have another concern where the mayor was very opposed to the state having a commission to look into the Gun Trace Task Force. She didn't feel like that was necessary. So it's kind of another level in which I feel like our current mayor is kind of scared of transparency.
There's one more officer to be charged in this case, Eric Troy Snell. When is his trial?
His trial begins on Monday the 29th. He is a Philadelphia officer. He's a former Baltimore police officer, but he is a Philadelphia officer. The indictments say that Snell, who is a police officer in Philadelphia and a former Baltimore police officer, was involved in transporting drugs that were stolen by Jamel Ram, one of the Gun Trace Task Force. They're essentially, what the indictment is saying is he was getting drugs from Baltimore and dealing them into Philadelphia, and then the money was being split up among some of the task force members and Snell.
On the issue of police overtime, just this week, the city's finance director released an audit and concluded the Baltimore Police Department doesn't have the tools in place to prevent waste and fraud. Is there a conflict between controlling overtime and fighting crime?
I believe there's a conflict, but I don't think it's an irresolvable conflict. I mean, certainly it's what a lot of – there's kind of two minds right now. The police union recently just said that they believe the city is severely understaffed in terms of police officers. Meanwhile, Councilman Ryan Dorsey believes that they're just not allocating staff well, and he's been confronting the police with this at public safety meetings, some of which the interim commissioner Tuggle has not shown up for, which I think also shows a certain degree of disinterest in fixing this. As for why, it kind of builds on itself. Okay, so crime is up because we don't have enough officers, but then we also don't have enough money, so we need to get more money, and then we need to get more overtime. And we've been doing this for a long time. That's where I am skeptical of it. the documentary Charm City, which is great. Everyone should go see that. They have a scene in 2016 about the same conversation. That was 2 years ago. If you read David Simon's book, Homicide, a lot of that is about these same overtime issues. So I'm suspicious of the correlation between the two because it's kind of been a problem long before we shot back up to 300 plus homicides a year.
Although the overtime numbers released this week indicated its spending on overtime has doubled in the last 5 years.
Right. It's doubled in the past 5 years. One way of looking at overtime, I would say, would be that overtime in a lot of ways is a way into corruption. I've spoken to some former police officers who have said that. If you want to see who you should be suspicious of, see who's committed, who's filing a ton of overtime. But like the task force members were doubling their salaries with overtime. That should have been a flag. It wouldn't have proved that they were dealing drugs, but it kind of would have been like a way to like Al Capone them. Like, well, yeah, you're off. There's almost no way you could be doing this much overtime. And so that's where I think overtime is important. It's a way of looking at having oversight over the department. If someone's lying about their overtime, they might be lying about someone else. And there's a clear look, you know, certainly homicide detectives, drug investigators are listening to phone calls, those kind of things. That's real overtime. But there's clearly just a lot of overtime being filed that a lot of people say is just falsifying. This isn't happening. And that's what the task force showed, that people were signing off for each other. They were showing up to work at 3:45 when their shift ended at 4. They pull someone over at 4:05 and their entire night of investigation is on overtime. So they were filing for the shift and the overtime.
Brandon, thanks for walking us through it.
No problem.
Brandon Soderberg is a journalist, former editor of City Paper, and former managing editor of Baltimore Beat. His forthcoming book, co-authored with journalist Baynard Woods, about the Gun Trace Task Force, is titled, I've Got a Monster. Quick break here on The Record on WIP. I'm Sheila Cast. When we're back, a Stoop story.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.